and the Ziphites came. You remember Ziphites? Ziph. Do you remember the Ziphites? And if you do, what's the name mean? Refiner. You're right. That's so good. See how that is. Now, and you have Ziphites in your life. I'm telling you, you have Ziphites in your life. And they're there to refine you. They're pestilent. They're quarrelsome. They're obnoxious. You don't want them in your life. And they are knocking off all the rough edges, and God has them in our life because we're not what we're supposed to be. And they're in all lives until the time we're refined. I say refined. Again, I said, you know, weeks ago, it's not like back in the days of Ozzy and Harry. You sent a girl off to finishing school. She could walk around with a book on her head, so she was refined. No. Think crucible. Think of like how gold, how silver is refined. You know, when it's heated up to all the impurities rise to the top and is scraped off. That's the refinement. And that's the process David's going through. He's learning. This is King 101, and he's taken all the mandatory classes that he has to take. None of them are, you know, extra classes or anything else, and God has taken him through. So the Ziphites came unto Saul to Gibeah, saying, "Doth not David hide himself in the hill of Hakalah, which is before Jeshimon?" Why? They're Judahites. Why are they doing this? To curry favor. And now, I think they're doubling down, because now that David's escaped, they're thinking, if he becomes king, we've already cast our lot in with Saul. Now, you know, in for a dime, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound, as the saying goes, right? I think we backed the wrong horse, but we better keep going, because, you know, some people do this. I think it's pride. They just double down. I was wrong. Well, I'm wrong. Might as well keep going. I call him a double down clown. If you're wrong, change. America loves a repentant sinner. You know, I messed up. I was wrong. I'm sorry. And people like lining up to forgive you. This is America. Like, yeah, don't worry about it. And some people cannot change because the pride is involved at this point. Is this it? It's hard to say, but again, why are they going out of their way to persecute David? At first I said it was to curry favor with Saul, but once Saul didn't get him, now it's like, David's going to get us. I think Saul's our best option. But if they went to David and said, yeah, we messed up, that was a really stupid idea, I'm sure Dave would have said, come on in, water's fine, let's all forget about it, it's all good. Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men. Again, this is the Green Beret, the Delta Force, is the best of the best, right? 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. Saul pitched in the hill of Hakilah, which is before Jeshimon, by the way, but David abode in the wilderness. He saw that Saul came after him in the wilderness. David therefore sent out spies and understood that Saul was coming, very deed. So he's got his peeps. You know, the espionage, the cloak and dagger types. Saul has his, and the battle is on. David arose, came to the place where Saul had pitched, and David beheld the place where Saul lay, and Abner the son of Ner, the captain of the host, and Saul lay in the trench, and the people pitched round about him. Trench is like just a part of the road where the carts make an indentation. It's called a trench. It's not a trench like, you know, dig. And because why? He's with the stuff and the baggage, and he's kind of like circle the wagons. He's inner. And his bodyguards, his chief men like Abner, are with him. It's dark. Is it a full moon? I don't know. Are there streetlights? Certainly not. Are there flashlights? No. It's dark. And we, you know, whatever natural light there is, that's all there is. Then answered David and said to Ahimelech the Hittite and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, brother to Joab. Now Zeruiah is, I don't know if we've been introduced to her, David's sister. perhaps almost generationally older, because it seems like her kids, Joab and Abishai and Asahel, are all like David's age, 20-ish, young 20s. Okay, now, by the way, David's in his probably mid to late 20s by now, because this is closer to 10 years. He's going to take the throne at 30. We're thinking this is about 18 months before that, ish. It's hard to put an exact. David's been running for a long, long time. I know it's a few chapters, but it's a big chunk of David's life. And it looks like one thing happens after another, but it's probably months and years in between some of these chapters, okay? Because we know David takes the throne at 30, and we know that he's a stripling when he goes against Goliath at the ripe old age of, what, 16, 17, 15 years old? We don't know. Just a kid, a mere beardless youth. I say beardless youth, we don't know about his beard. I'm just using that, okay. So David answered and said to Ahimelech the Hittite and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, the brother to Joab, saying, who will go down with me to Saul of the camp? And Abishai said, I will go down with thee. Abishai and Joab are tough hombres. They're his sister's kids. So it's basically Uncle David, although they're probably all the same age, right? So David said to Abishai, come to the people by night, and behold. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping within the trench, and his spear stuck in the ground at his bolster. But Abner and the people lay round about him. Then said Abishai to David, God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Remember in the cave? Same thing. Would you finally kill this fool? Come on, Dave. We've had enough. Look at God has delivered him, and the God talk comes, right? God has delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now, therefore, let me smite him. What is he saying? He's saying, oh, look, I know you have that God-anointed, quirky, weird thing going on. I'll take care of this. Let me smite him. I pray thee, with the spear, even to the earth at once. I will not smite him the second time. It just takes one of these, one spear thrust. I got this. It's done. And you don't even have to worry about it because you didn't do anything. I did. Wow. Wow. Is that hard to pass up? Think to yourself, this fool has been chasing me for 10, 11 years now. I'm sick and tired of this. I've had about a belly full. I probably should have killed him back in a cave. Why doesn't he? Nabal, anyone? You remember when he finally says, okay, I've taken all I can stand, I can't stand some more. He let him live in the cave. And then this fool says to him, who's David? Who's the son of Jesse? A lot of guys are breaking away from their masters these days. What an insult. Hurled just. So the 10 guys come back empty-handed. Everyone must gather around. They said everything he said. David has lost face. He is. Okay, boys, put your weapons on. You come with me. Us 400, you 200 stay back with the stuff. They got a lot of stuff now, right? He's about to have a lot more. Abigail's very wealthy. Where's all her? Remember, her husband who just... He's got 3,000 sheep. So he's going to say, I am sick and fed up of being no more Mr. Nice Guy. And God intervened through the agency of Abigail. God bless her. God bless her. She said all the things that she had to say to save David from taking vengeance. And she said, you know, this thing's going to be, when you're the king, what did she know? What most of Israel know. When you're the king, God's rescued you now, that you're not going to have to worry about this. You know, it's not going to be a grief of heart to you that you took vengeance into your own hand. And she delivered David from reaching out and taking vengeance. Remember, we say this often here, vengeance isn't bad. It's just God's. God says, let me do vengeance. Oh, we want to do that so bad when somebody, he's standing on my last nerve. I am just up to about here with this. And you know how it is. And you know how it is. And God said, Abigail, you better run and tell Dave. So she takes this, he takes all the gift from her hand, and he says, blessed art thou of the Lord, the whole thing there. Nabal dies. God took Nabal's life. David got the download. Oh, I get it. You really do repay. You can take care of stuff. Oh, so I really don't have to kill Saul next time I get the chance. You could, the thing I said back in the cave, that was true. He could die of old age. He could die in a battle. He could, something bad could happen to him, but God's got it. I don't have to worry about this. Now he's got another chance, but this is post Nabal, okay, Nabal, or post that whole situation. And I think things happen, our life plays out in a certain order. You know, first comes the lesson, then comes the test. Have you seen this in your life? When something comes and you're thinking like, oh, I should, what should I do? Well, I know what I should do. I just heard it Sunday morning, or I just read this in the Bible yesterday, or I just, how many times has that happened to us? Like, I don't know, a million or two? I mean, okay, I'm slightly exaggerating. A lot of times, the word really is the foundation of how we build our lives. It's really a compass to point us to. I can't tell you how many times I read something, it's almost like, oh, and then it happens that day. It's almost like a, oh, this is why you have me reading this. And now, first the lesson plan, and then the test. But I already know the answers. It's an open book test. And now I have to actually apply what I've learned and actually do it. And this is David. God's delivered your enemy in your hand. I'll smite him. I won't even have to do it twice. David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? I can't and you can't. That's important. David establishing the rules for kingdom. David said furthermore, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. God's got this. I absolutely believe there is a God who rules in the affairs of men, and he's got this. And we don't have to do this. The Lord forbid that I should stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed, but I pray thee, take thou now the spear that is in his bolster. He's had enough of that spear thrown at him, right? And the cruse of water, and let us go. So David took the spear and the cruse of water. And I think he took the spear because he didn't want Abishai to have that because he thinks it'd be too much temptation for Abishai. So David took the spear and the cruse of water from Saul's bolster, and they get them away, and no man saw it nor knew it, neither awake, for they were all asleep because a deep sleep from the Lord was fallen upon them. How handy. David went over to the other side and stood on the top of the hill afar off, a great space being between them, a ravine, actually. And if people suspect that, you know, this happened here and this is where, it's actually a ravine. And anyway, nobody can be exactly sure, but David cried to the people and to Abner, the son of Ner, saying, answerest thou not, Abner? Abner's funny because Abner means my father is Ner. And his father's name is Ner, so he named his son, my father is Ner. That's like me naming one of my kids, my father is Adam. I had a daughter. One of the boys might have turned out to be a daughter. We were going to name her my mother is Suze, because I thought it was a lot more feminine that way. But we'd still name her my father is Adam, but answerest not Abner the son and Abner the son of Ner, answerest thou not Abner? And Abner answers, who art thou that criest to the king? He doesn't recognize his voice. And David said to Abner, art thou not a valiant man? And who is like thee in Israel? Wherefore then hast thou not kept the Lord the king? For there came one of the people in to destroy the king, thy Lord. This thing is not good that thou hast done. As the Lord liveth, you are worthy to die, because you have not kept your master, the Lord's anointed. And now see where the king's spear is and the cruse of water that was at his bolster. Boy, he's letting him have it with both barrels, isn't he? He's pretty, I think he's still fed up, and he's giving him some. That's fine. He didn't hurt anybody, and if words hurt, well, get over yourself, but. And Saul knew David's voice. I guess Abner doesn't. Saul knew David's voice. Says, "Is this my voice, my son David? My son David, you hypocrite, you lousy hypocrite." David said, "It is my voice, my lord, O king. What happened to my father?" I think we're past that now. I think we're past that. And besides, you got to remember, his wife was taken from him and given to Phalte. Is that his name? Phalte, the son of Laish, who was of Galim. So he's not his father-in-law anymore. Had David heard about that? Or is he just saying, he's just, okay, my lord the king, let's leave it at that. It's still courteous. It's not, he's not calling him, hey, knucklehead, or anything. He's not being discourteous, but he's not that familial. He was trying to endear himself before. Now, we're way past that. You swore by the Lord. You took an oath to Jonathan that you ran right through. You took an oath to me. We all heard it. What are you doing? It is my voice, my lord, O king. And he said, wherefore doth my lord thus pursue after his servant? For what have I done? What evil is in my hand? He's talking to Saul, but you got to know, he's talking to 600 guys of his, plus all the women, the children. It could be like 3,000 people here on his team, right? That he's protecting. They're not all warriors. A lot of them have families. He's talking to the 3,000 that are with Saul. And he's kind of indicting him. Why are you following after this guy? I haven't done anything wrong. There all have to be this going like, I don't know. I've just signed up for the army. Here I am. I don't know what to tell you. Wherefore doth my lord thus pursue after his servant? For what have I done? Or what evil is in my hand? Now therefore I pray thee, let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. If the Lord hath stirred thee up against me, let him accept an offering. I'll make an offering right now. If I could get to the tabernacle, if I could come home. There's an indictment there, right? But if they be the children of men, cursed they be before the Lord. For they have driven me out of this day from abiding in the inheritance of the Lord. So he's got a portion like everyone else. Remember, everything's given down through the tribe, through the family head, from fathers to sons. It's all, David's got a portion of land in Bethlehem. He can't go to Bethlehem. He's been driven out of the inheritance of the Lord. Thanks, King. This is way bad, what Saul's doing in trying to murder David and all the things that are associated with that. I can't go to the tabernacle. I can't go home. I can't make an offering. So people are saying this about me, whatever. What evil's in my hand? I could have took your life the second time. If they be the children of men, cursed be they before the Lord, for they have driven me out of this day from abiding in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go serve other gods. Because I can't go to the tabernacle. I can't worship the Lord, the true God, like God wants to be worshipped. I can't keep Passover. I can't keep Shabbat. I can't do anything that God requires. I can't even make an annual sacrifice. I can't be part of Yom Kippur. I can't. Basically saying, yeah, why don't you go serve other gods, because you sure can't come around here serving our God. Now, therefore, let not my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord. For the king of Israel's come out to seek a flea, as when one doth hunt a partridge in the mountains. Then said Saul, I have sinned. Duh. Yeah, you said that before. Listen, guys, have you ever had someone come to you and say, yeah, I'm sorry, I was wrong, I just didn't. And the crocodile tears come, and they're repenting to you for the 84th time. So what do? You have to forgive. You have to, because that's what's, and you can't judge, because guess what? You don't know what's in somebody's heart, and this could be for real. This could be the turning point. This could be, but we've seen it, and we've seen it, and we've seen it, and we've seen it. The guy comes home drunk, and, you know, beats his wife, and the next day he's so filled with remorse, it'll never happen again, until this Friday night when I get paid and got a pocket full of money, and then you just watch out, sister. What are you going to do? Well, a guy who beats his wife, you call the police and have him locked up, because that's against the law. But what about the guy who's just, you know, just treats his wife bad, and then she's really upset and she's threatened divorce, and he on come the crocodile tears again. This is Saul. It's so transparent. What do? Well, you don't trust him, but let's see what David does. I have sinned. Return, my son David. No. For I will no more do thee harm. I was born at night, David says, but it wasn't last night. Forget about it. Your word is to me nothing, or less than nothing. And by the way, when you forgive somebody, that doesn't mean you have to be stupid and trust that everything they say from now on is, you know what I mean? If somebody's like, had a problem with like child abuse, you don't have to like, okay, and they say, I've sinned, I've turned a corner, I've seen the light now, and I'll never do that again. That's fine. You don't have to trust them to babysit your grandkids. You know what I mean? And you'd be kind of dumb too. Come to church, be with us. Yeah. We have a lot of sheriffs around. Eyes on. I mean, nothing untoward's going to happen. Not on our watch, but will it? But doesn't mean, hey, let's be stupid about this. Because he's shedding the crocodile tears, saying the right thing, and if his words could be trusted, Dave's off scot-free. Dave goes home to Bethlehem. Everything's fine. He's the next king. And Saul is just saying what's expedient. He lost face in front of his 3,000 guys again. He doesn't know when to quit. He's battling God because he's battling God's anointed. Will he beat God? David's not going to be king. I'm telling you right now, Saul says. And God's saying, I'm pretty sure he's going to be king next. you know. But hey, look, how many people do that? How many people battle God? And I'm going to win. I have played the fool, have erred exceedingly. I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. That part's true. I will no more do thee harm. He's not going to, but that's only because God intervenes. This is the last time Saul and David are face to face. Okay, it's at night. They're not face to face like I'm face to face with you. They can't see each other. They hear his voice, but this is the last meeting they're going to have. God's moving now. David answers that, behold the king's spear, let one of the young men come over and fetch it. The Lord render to every man his righteousness and his faithfulness, for the Lord delivered thee into my hand today, but I would not stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed. Behold, as thy life was much set by this day in mine eyes, so let my life be set by in the eyes of the Lord, and let him deliver me out of all tribulation. As your life was much set by in my eyes, so my life should be much set by in your eyes. He's not saying that. He doesn't care about Saul's eyes, because Saul's eyes are lying, like his lying mouth and his and everything else. He takes oaths that he doesn't even care about. And he said before, I'm not going to do you any harm, and he goes to do him harm. So there he says, I want to be set, like I've set... Look, as thy life was much set by this day in mine eyes, so let my life be much set by in the eyes of the Lord. And let him deliver me out of all tribulation, like the tribulation you're giving me. Then Saul said to David, "Blessed be thou, my son David. Thou shalt both do great things and also shalt still prevail." So David went on his way and Saul returned to his place. And again, this is the last time they're going to meet head to head. They might meet head to head on the battlefield if David has his way, but God's not going to let that happen. You say, what are you talking about? Well, let's keep reading. David said in his heart, "I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than that I should escape speedily. I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines, and Saul shall despair of me and to seek me anymore in any coast of Israel, so shall I escape out of his hand." I think this is backsliding. I'm just going to be frank with you. Last time he went to Philistine country, he had a feign like he was crazy. This is round two. Because sometimes I can't turn it off. I can't stop the tribulation. I can't. And you just don't know where to turn, and you're at a loss, and it's like tidal wave after tidal wave, and you're trying to find your feet and trying to catch your breath, and you're battered and you're beaten, and you need fellowship at that point. You need someone wise and sagacious in your life to point you back to the word of the Lord and to tell you what God's saying in a situation. It's happened to all of us. Life is so overwhelming sometimes. Sometimes it's like, Adam, what are you talking about? You know, I went to work today. It was fine. I came home. I had a lovely dinner. And most days are good. And they're fine. But then we have this season in our life where it's just, it's depressing. It's hard to get out of bed. Nothing's working out. And by the way, it's not a sin to be depressed. It's not a great idea to give up on God, because that's part of the whole depression scenario. I'm so paralyzed. I can't move. I just can't. Nothing's going good. It's never going to get any better. A little bridge too far. Come on back. You need a hug? Come here. Give you a big old hug. You need to cry on somebody's shoulder. That's fine. It's all good. And that happens to us. And we need a respite sometimes. God knows. And we go through one of those seasons. I think we come out the other side better, more purified. But it's hard. Isn't it hard? And we all have them. And to pretend that we don't that's not spiritual. That's not good. Stiff upper lip. That's what we need in this situation. That's what we need. We need a stiff upper lip. How's it going, Adam? Oh, fine. No. My life is going sideways. It's completely, the wheels are coming off the cart. I'm losing my mind. I can't bear up under, but oh, fine. Oh, it's fine. See how spiritual I am? Now, you know how it is when, how's it going? And you get an organ recital. Well, my spleen is spleeny, and my knee. I got to tell you, right, I've never had pain like, and we got to hear every last, but I went to the doctor, and blah, 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 and we just go on for 3.5 hours over how. You mean your life's hard right now? Is that what you're trying to say? Because I'm not a doctor, but let's have prayer right here, right now. Let's pray. And that's you need that. You need people prayer, and you need a person to say, Sue said something like the other night, I don't want to tell you because she didn't give me permission to, and it was a good question, and it was beyond me. I hate to admit that. And I said, you know what you need? You need one of your little gal pals. And I said, and I recommend, I said, why don't you talk to this one or this one about that? You know, pastor's wife specifically about what to do in a situation. Oh, it wasn't about me. It was like, okay, Adam, what did you do? No, I didn't do anything. And I thought, like, she needed some guidance. She needed some. Sue's has the answer so many times. Even in my life, I would ask Sue's, like, well, what do you think? You know, and she's usually, sometimes, you know, how, I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how much Bible you know. Sometimes you need somebody with a, because you know how sometimes, like, because of the situation, you can't see it clearly. Because it's, you're, like, I ask a friend, he'll say, and it was, like, obvious. It was, like, there all along. He'll say a verse, and I was, like, Oh, like I didn't know that verse. But I didn't see it. I can't see it because of my perspective, because my feelings were involved, my emotions, and my just a lot of factors and stuff. This is David right here, right now. He is just worn out. He's following the Lord. He's not doing anything wrong. God's refining him, and it's very, very hard process. And you ain't meant to go it alone. And he's got these guys with him, but Abishai, yeah, I'll kill him. I won't have to strike him twice. Thanks, dude, but cool out now. He's kind of the leader over all these people spiritually. He's a young man, but he's really wise in the ways of the Lord. He does have a priest with him, right? He's got Abiathar. It seems like he has Gad with him, so he does have some spiritual counsel. But here he goes. I'm going to perish. I'm going to the Philistine country. I think he's backsliding. David arose, and he passed over with the 600 men that were with him unto Achish, the king of Maoch, king of Gath. Gath is the hometown of a certain Philistine that David beat up to death when he was just a little boy, and he's come back to Gath. Remember, when he was there before, he pretended like he was a crazy person. David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, even David with his two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the Carmelitess, Nabal's wife. And it was told Saul that David was fled to Gath, and he sought him no more. He sought no more again for him. He's not going to Philistine country to try to kill David, okay? So David's plan works. I don't think it's the plan of God. I think this is David taking matters into his own hands. But the ends justify the means, because now Saul's not trying to kill him. Listen, he could live in the palace and Saul can't kill him until God says it's okay. But that's what we lose. We lose that perspective sometimes. He is 10 foot tall and bulletproof, being out there in the wilderness and in Gedi and all these places. How many times has Saul sought him? A lot. How many times has he got him? Zero. So if you're counting, it's like whatever, how many encounters, how many skirmishes, it's David 24, Saul 0, if you keep in score. And by extension, God 24 and Saul 0. I mean, that's the whole thing. God is blessing David. So Saul's not going to seek him anymore. David said to Achish, if I have now found grace in thine eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country that I may dwell there. For why should thy servant dwell in the royal city with thee? Then Achish gave him Ziklag that day. Wherefore Ziklag pertaineth unto the kings of Judah unto this day. At the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was a full year and 4 months. Okay, so we're talking about 16 months. I'd say it was about 18 months earlier, so we're still about 2 months out-ish, okay, that Saul's all done, okay? He's going to meet his end. After he encounters a witch, of Endor, he is spiraling down. He's consulting a witch, but we'll save that. So it's a year and 4 months. And David and his men went up and invaded the Geshurites and the Gezrites and the Amalekites, for those nations were of old the inhabitants of the land, as thou goest to Shur, even in the land of Egypt. And David smote the land and left neither man nor woman alive, and took away the sheep and the oxen and the asses and the camels and the apparel in return, and came to Achish. And Achish said, whither have ye made a road today? And David said, against the south of Judah, and against the south of the Jerahmeelites, and against the south of the Kenites. So he's attacking, he's telling Achish, and he's lying, that he's attacking southern Judah, basically, in different towns. And so he's lying to Achish. And David saved neither man nor woman alive to bring tidings to Gath, saying, lest they should tell on us, saying, and so did David, and so will be his manner all the while he dwelleth in the country of the Philistines. So he's fighting the Lord's enemies, people and countries that they were supposed to be taken away when Joshua came into the land, but he's doing this on his own. He's not, like, obeying the command of God. God's saying, like, you remember, Lord, should I go to Keilah? Will you deliver it into my hand? Yep, go. I'll deliver it. Remember when the Philistines were attacking? And so the people saying, we're afraid here in Judah. You want us to go fight Philistines down in Keilah? I don't know. That's not a good idea. He says, all right, let me check with headquarters again. So he runs it up the flagpole to see if the chief salutes it. God said, and God was very gracious, yes. Go to Keilah, you go to deliver it from the Philistines. And he went the second, and after he consulted the second time, he says, yeah, I'm going, I'm in, who's with me, let's go. And did he go and he fight the Philistines? Yes, he did. Was he successful? Yes. Did God deliver it in his hands? Yes. God said he would. You remember? Is this what we're seeing here? It doesn't look like it. It's where have you made a road today? The king of Achish, the king of Gath says, and I think he's almost prophetic. Where did you make a road? Where did you, you know what I mean? You're going your way. And I'm thinking that's almost how David's acting at this time. Listen, it's okay to do whatever you want to do as long as it's not actively against what God says, right? No. We're the servants of God. We're to do what God tells us to do, what season God tells us to do it, and we're supposed to be exactly obedient to what he says. I think I'll fly to Ecuador. I always wanted to see that. Sue's there, and I wasn't. A little jealous. So I'll go down to Quito. Is Quito in Ecuador? Okay, I'm going to Quito, and I'm going to get, because I like the diet anyway, right? So I'm going to, I'm sorry, I just thought of that. All right. And I'm going to go down there, and I'm going to evangelize, and I'm going to just tell everyone about the Lord. I'm not going to learn the language, and hopefully there'll be a... And I'm just determined to do this. Is that a good idea? Well, yeah, if God's in it. But if God hasn't told me to do that, you see what I'm saying? Even if whatever he's doing, I think he's doing it. He's the one who said, I'm going to Gath. I'm going to, oh, give me a place out here. I'm going to do this. And I'm going to, I think he's... not thinking clearly. I think he's in a bad place. And I think I can prove that. David saved neither man nor woman alive. Can't let Achish find out what's going on. He's lying. David's had a propensity to do that. We've seen that. So did David, and so will be his manner. His manner or God's will in his life. His manner. All the while he dwelleth in the country of the Philistines. Achish believed David, saying, he hath made his people, Israel, utterly to abhor him. Therefore, he will be my servant forever. Let's look at the first two verses. We're done. Okay, so don't get nervous. I'm going to take a whole chapter. Let's look at the first two verses. It came to pass in those days, Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. You know the place David's from? And Achish said unto David, because he's been attacking Israel all along in Achish's mind. So Achish said to David, know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men. David said to Achish, surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do. Is he lying to him? I think he is. I don't think David, he's backsliding. I think he's like willful and doing things that he wants to do. But I don't think it's to the point where I'm ready to take up arms against my own people. What happens if they're on the battlefield and he runs headlong into Jonathan? What's he going to do? What if he runs into Saul, who he's twice spared his life? Is it okay in battle to take his life? Or any Israelite's life? He's not going. I don't think he's going into battle with him. Look at his. He's like, you're going to see what I'm able to do. Yeah, I that's short of a promise. Yep, I'm going to kill me some Israelites. He's still lying. And I think if God doesn't intervene here through the lords of the Philistines, we'll see that. Some of you know the story. Then he's going into battle against Israel. God can never let that happen. So what? You're in a place where you've had it. You're so stressed. Now you're making bad decisions. Will God let you make ultimately really bad decisions? He's still God. He's still Lord in our life. He'll still come to our rescue. He'll still tell us, Adam, sweetheart, you're way out there. Come on back, and he'll reel us back in. He'll send people to us. He'll change the situation for us so that, you know, we won't be. And so, you know, when I've really messed up my life, I mean really messed up, at times when I've really, I always knew there was a point there where I think like, okay, if I go beyond this, this is bad, this is sin. And almost invariably, I find myself with a bad attitude, right? Like something happened and I'll check and I'll say, okay, I'm really messing up here. All right, Lord, help me to cope with this situation and to, you know, bring things back into balance. And he's good that way. But when I'm about to mess up, like royally, there'll always be like a stop sign there and a fork in the road. And the Spirit of God said, you know what's going to happen if you take the wrong road here. I always have that option to run through that stop sign or, okay, this is, should a man such as I get involved in something? And I think David's at that crossroads now. And he's probably really stressing out. Like, what am I going to do? Is there some prayer here? Like, I don't know any of this. This is all speculation. But we'll see how God intervenes and how God rescues and saves the day. Are you struggling right now? You're in a bad place? You're in a, like really a struggle? God's good. God's good. Get with somebody. And say, listen, I need prayer. Doesn't mean you're a bad person. Doesn't mean, because, you know, my pastor, famous for like, well, feelings, we don't go by feelings, you know, like, God bless him. We don't, but we have them. And they're not how we set our compass. We set our compass by the Word of God. But sometimes it's despite our, very often it's despite our feelings. And that's a hard thing to do. It's really a hard thing to do. That's easy when it's a stupid little thing, but when it's somebody's trying to kill you to death and chasing you and you can't be in your house and your home and your wife's given to somebody else and your best friend you have no access to and your family, and that's a stressor, okay? And he's at the point, he's at the end of his rope. He needs wise counsel. He needs somebody to point him back to the Lord. And you getting there doesn't make you a bad person. Okay, it just means, hey, I've given you people in your life. I've given you community. I've given you fellowship. I've given you access to wisdom. And sometimes, I don't care, again, how smart you are. I don't care how smart I am. Sometimes we can't see the forest for the trees because our emotions are in the way and they cloud our vision. We need somebody with a step back who doesn't have that clouded vision or can look at our situation and say, this is the way. This is what the Word says. Praise God. I can't tell you how many times this happened in my life. I can't tell you how many times this happened in my life.